Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Did you know that doing a search on the word leader will produce 1.02 billion hits on Google? The phrase global leader returns 411 million hits. Wow. Global leadership is an extremely hot topic, not only in a practical sense, as both managers and leaders are challenged to do more with less, but it's also an important topic for researchers as they work to identify and understand the variables that will help predict leadership success. So happy Monday and welcome to another information-packed edition of Global Leader Radio. And so today I'm excited to introduce two people with the awesome responsibility to produce results through their leadership. So one does this primarily in the corporate world, and the other works through her entrepreneurial pursuits, helping corporate leaders. So both of them are incredibly passionate about what they do, and especially in how they produce results. And they've taken time out of their busy schedules to visit, share their stories, and their wisdom and insights. So I'm proud to welcome Keith Holmes, the Vice President, General Manager of Mobility and Consumer Markets for AT&T. Keith embodies the student athlete title as he received his bachelor's degree in management from Georgia Tech while starring as the starting cornerback on a national championship football team, right?
That's correct, Alvin.
And Anna Stevens, an entrepreneur who specializes in social media and marketing. She's the founder of EQ for Success, an Atlanta-based company that provides consulting, training, and coaching in emotional intelligence. Anna currently is finishing her first book called Get Rid of Your If Only and Start Creating Success You Desire. Right, Anna?
Exactly. Hi, Alvin. Hi, everybody. Hi, Keith. And hi, everybody who is with us live today or maybe listening afterwards.
Absolutely. So, Keith, if you don't mind, we'll start with Anna.
Absolutely. I will go right ahead.
Well, fantastic. So, Anna, let's start with helping our listeners become a little bit more familiar with your fascinating background on a personal side. So you came to America from Russia, correct?
I did. And I know in the beginning of the introduction, you told everybody that I'm a social media expert. That's actually a big secret. Because today here I am on the show as an emotional intelligence expert.
There you go.
Yes, I come here from Russia, and I have been raised in a very abusive family with a single mother, and the majority of my family members were people who would drink every day, and we actually produced our own alcohol at home. So my childhood was not fun at all, and because of the lack of support, I think that it became my competitive advantage later on in life. I had to be my own parent. I had to be my own inspiration, motivation. When I graduated with high honor from my school, my mom really did not express any interest in helping me enter college. So I did it on my own. And later on, when I graduated from a teaching school, I had to go to university. And again, I had no support except for the director of the school.
Okay.
And once I was accepted to that school 3 years later, that was a business school in a city of Kursk in Russia. Then I was accepted to law school and I graduated with high honor from both of them. And in the meantime, I was working, Alvin, in sales and management. And I had my own store where I was doing everything. And that's how I have learned about the importance of realization, how our emotions affect our behaviors. Our behaviors affect our interactions with people and also our own actions, and that affects our productivity and our bottom line. That's how I became passionate about emotional intelligence, and I got my certification here. Now I do training and coaching in this area.
Okay, so how long have you been in America?
I've been here for over 4 years.
Okay.
But it feels like a lifetime. I actually taught myself English. When I came here, I spoke no English.
That's impressive. In 4 years, you've made it to the point where you are today. So that's impressive to be able to communicate the way you do.
Yeah, the language point is great. I think that I did a good job, and I actually studied it by myself at home with a book and watching GPB channel, the kids channel. But also I think that all the challenges that I've experienced in my life, they came, they helped me come to the point where I'm really happy with who I am, with where I'm at, with my wonderful family, and with what I do for a living, too.
Well, great. Well, tell us a little bit about your family.
I'm happily married to Dr. Philip Day. My husband is the past president of Georgia Chiropractic Association and the Chiropractor of the Year for the state of Georgia of 2010. Now he oversees 12 states for CACSA, Chiropractic National State Association.
Very nice.
And overall, he's just a very good guy. And he brought two children into my life. They're 7 and 8. They're my stepsons, and they're wonderful, wonderful boys. Who are Indian, half Indian. And so we have my American husband, my Indian children, and me from Russia. So we do understand the value of global leadership and diversity and acceptance. And that's what I promote in my business, because you need to be able to evaluate people and appreciate them and acknowledge them for what it is that they bring to the table and what leadership qualities they possess versus their skin color or the shape of their teeth or their eyes.
Yeah, such an important point. I'm glad you brought that up. So when we skip ahead to EQ for success, what is EQ success? EQ for success, and what's the mission? Why did you create that company?
I created the company. First of all, EQ stands for emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And emotional intelligence, guys, has nothing to do with being feely-touchy or crying. It has to do with you being intelligent about your emotions so that you fully realize how emotions affect your decision-making, your interactions with your customers, your partners, your colleagues, and your investors. And very often you hear from somebody, oh, gosh, I have a new boss and I don't want to work for the company anymore where I've worked, let's say, for the last 30 years. Or people say, yes, I've been doing business with this company. I've been a part of their supply chain forever, but now I don't like them anymore. I think that I'm not going to work with them anymore because they have a new CEO. That tells you right here that people actually don't work for organizations. They don't work for companies. They don't work for your building or your nice furniture. They work for people,
exactly.
And they work with people. And so depending on the your emotional intelligence competencies and how you interact with people, how much you are aware of yourself, how well you understand where you need to stop, where it's too much for you, or maybe you're in a bad mood and you decide to take proactive approach to life, because between what happens to us and what we do with what happens to us lies the power of our choice. And we all have challenges in the morning. Maybe our children don't want to get up. Maybe somebody cursed us out on the phone. Maybe we got a bad email. Somebody's father died from cancer. We found out from Facebook or whatever, the pollution is high, the rain is too bad. We need to be able to get rid of all these things and focus clearly on what it is that we need to accomplish today and how we feel affects our relationships with people throughout the day. And as long as we stay self-aware and we understand that, then we're able to be clear and we're able to stay focused and we're able to bring the value to people regardless of the level of pollution or the temperature outside of our office.
So somewhere between stimulus and response, there is the opportunity and free will, the choice, right, that
exactly.
we have to make. And so I think what you're saying is that we have to be constantly aware and continue to monitor where we are emotionally. Is that really the key?
You're absolutely right. And not only with ourselves, even though a relationship with ourselves is the foundation of our interactions with others and our success, but we need to be able to understand people. And that is based on empathy. Empathy is one of the most important, I think, skills of emotional intelligence. Empathy has nothing to do with me feeling for you crying at my office.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It has something to do with me understanding your culture background, where you come from with your decisions, what motivates you. Even if you're my customer, or maybe you're my colleague, or maybe you're my employee and I'm your leader, I need to be able to create a win-win situation, whether it's in my communication with you, maybe in your boss on a daily basis, or maybe creating policies for our organization, right, or maybe creating and delivering the value for our clients, right? Or maybe attracting investors to our company. We need to come to all this, to accomplishing all these tasks from the place of empathy. Mm-hmm. What motivates the person that I'm working with now? How can I satisfy their need? For example, if you're like me, an entrepreneur, you need to be able, when you go to bed, you ask yourself, as my client is lying in their bed right now, what keeps them up? What does not allow them to relax and go to sleep? How can I solve that problem? How can I make their life easier? And my client is a CEO or a human resource manager who is looking to reduce their employees' turnover rate, increase their employees' retention rate, hire high potential leaders, identify them, and actually retain them. Mm-hmm. Because hiring is only one part, small part of the process, retaining the leaders and increasing the satisfaction with the job and promoting the leaders. That's what I do, and I have specific tools to do it. Now, they have a problem, and when I talk to them, that's what keeps them up at night.
That's right.
And
that's
with my tools and my emotional intelligence assessments, consulting, coaching, workshops, I'm able to bring that value to the table and teach them how to actually identify high potential leaders, how to cultivate them, and how to discover the gaps. If there are any behavioral gaps, you identify the behaviors that you want to promote in your organization, in your leaders, and if you use the emotional intelligence assessment on your potential leaders and you identify gaps, then I can, sit down with them, create their
development
smart
plans and
yeah,
smart goals.
And fill that up. And yes. That's what emotional intelligence is all about.
So pretty important, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you talked about being able to hire people, and then being able to keep them on the payroll. I know Keith certainly recognizes that when it comes to being able to bring employees on, that's the most expensive part of the whole equation in an employee's life cycle, right? I mean, bringing on the employee is expensive, correct?
No, absolutely, Alvin. When you think about hiring, right, you think about it in lots of phases. First, you've got hiring. And that's about hiring the right individual.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, if you have assessments, if you have tests and training and all of those things that we put our employees through, what you'll find is that that's a very expensive proposition just to get them on the payroll. But beyond that, there's retention.
That's the key.
Okay, because you have invested, you have a sunk cost in this employee. Now you've lost them, you have to replace them, so now you have to pay that all over again.
Yeah.
And so retention is unbelievably important in any business. Training is important in any business. And so therefore, coaching, leadership is very important, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the difference between a manager and a leader is a manager takes an average person and they probably become average and they stay average. A leader takes an average person and they help them become better.
Excellent.
And they help them grow and they help them develop. And so, one of the things that we measure pretty aggressively is our, retention rate of how we keep employees. And we are definitely focused on making sure that we do that, because to your point, Alvin, the cost associated with that, not only to the business, but to the customer, to the continuity of the business, and to the employee is pretty high.
Yeah, and to the brand, too, because
absolutely.
What happens when you bring an employee on and that employee is not satisfied because you didn't take the time to make the fit correct up front, and if there's a mismatch and that employee has to then leave the payroll for whatever reason, that person will go out and talk to X number of people. I'm sure you certainly know what the statistics are with regard to that. But certainly you don't want people walking out with the brand that says, Alvin Miles' company is not a great place to work. Right?
Or even worse, they're going to blog about it.
absolutely, Alvin. We do something we call the first fit survey, the first fit meeting. Just to that point, it's about sitting down with your manager, with your supervisor, your leader, to say, let's talk about the job. Let's talk about your personality. Let's talk about how those two things fit together so that we can help you be successful in this role.
Yeah, and that's important. I remember, I'm old enough to remember Bonanza, and I'm certainly, Kevin, you probably remember some of that in terms of watching it on reruns. I remember when it was actually being shown as a young kid. And one of the things I remember vividly is that on the Ponderosa, they would hire hands. They'd call them hands. So today, the hands aren't enough. We need the heart to go along with the hands. And with that, that's the reason, in my opinion, why it was so important to have you, Anna, on today to talk about the EQ side of it, because people somehow feel that the soft side is the weaker side of leadership. And you would probably disagree with that, wouldn't you?
I would absolutely, Alvin. And when I hear sometimes from people saying that emotions have nothing to do at the workplace, oh, we don't get so emotional or feely touch at our workplace, I feel sorry for these people because they do not realize what they're missing on. Would you say that how you feel today, what happened to you in the morning, what kind of back pain you experience, or what's happening to your daughter, maybe she got into a car accident and her car broke down on the road, would you say that these things will not affect your next meeting with your investors? Of course they will. Of course all of it is going to affect your decision making, whether you need to make decisions in regards to your company or to your employees or whatever, whatever. All of this is going to affect you. So when we are aware of this process, then we can do something about it. If we just being ignorant and say it has nothing to do at our workplace, then we're definitely missing out on this whole process. And I think that emotional intelligence, and by the way, if you go and set up Google Alerts, you will see that more and more Google Alerts will start popping up with time about emotional intelligence. More people recognize the value of it. And as we talked about leaders and how AT&T actually does their leadership development, I wanted to bring one concern. The United States Air Force, they were losing millions of dollars on a regular basis annually because they were unable to retain their recruits. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they invested $10,000 into the emotional intelligence assessment EQI 2.0 that I talked about before. And that assessment, you sit down with an expert like me and you talk about what would be a good behavioral fit for, regardless of your skill set, your expertise, your educational background, your professional background. All this doesn't matter when you talk about what behavioral trends it's going to take to accomplish this job. So they sit down and they talked about it, and they've come up with several ideal profiles for a recruit for the U.S. Air Force. Their annual saving now is $3 million. That's how much they save by investing $10,000 in the assessment of emotional intelligence. Because when you actually talk to people what it's going to take from their side to do well on the job after you hired them, what if you discovered that they're not willing to do it? What if you discovered that your manager whom you just hired is unable to provide an effective negative feedback? What if he looks at it as punishing people? What if he does not want to understand that providing a negative feedback to a person with empathy actually means that you believe in them? You're giving them a chance to hear this negative feedback because you believe in them so much that they can improve upon your feedback. Then you're just telling them honestly about it without making it a sandwich feedback where you say, hey, you're such a nice guy, blah, 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 blah. We have this little bit of problem, but other than that, and the person leaves the meeting and they're like, oh, I just had a nice conversation with my manager. I'm doing well, right?
Because the last thing they hear is the first thing they remember.
Exactly.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, interestingly enough, in our program, we talk about feedback, and we have taken the emotionality out of it by teaching people that there is a format you can use. So, for example, that feedback that says you're doing well, continue to do it, we call it BET, behavior, effect, and thank you. And the focus is on behavior, not the emotionality.
Nice.
And on the constructive feedback, I know you refer to it as negative. And some people listening to this program might say, well, negative is not the right word. Interestingly enough, it is the right word with regard to the receiver. The
yes.
receiver sees it as negative. Of course, when we're talking in this office and in this room, what we want to tell people is that it's constructive feedback because mm-hmm. we want you to improve your behavior. That is really for improvement's sake.
And so we believe in it.
Absolutely. And so the acronym there is BEAR. So behavior, effect, the alternate behavior, and then the result that we expect when you get that. So it implies that the actual sender of the message, me to you perhaps, have taken the time to say this behavior doesn't work based on a set of standards we've all agreed to, perhaps corporate standards or in our program team standards with regard to a team constitution. And so to be able to get you back in line with the way we do things and the norms, here's an alternate behavior I've taken the time to invest to say, here's what you can use. So the gift of the feedback is in the fact that I've taken the time to actually say, here's what you should be able to try to be able to make it better, and here's what the result would be. So when you look at it from a corporate perspective, it does work. The fun part about it, of course, Keith knows this because Keith has spent time in our program with us and actually spoke in our program, is that we've graduated over 600 employees, leadership, et cetera, at BellSouth, Singular, Babco, AT&T. So mm-hmm. it does work. So there's plenty of people walking down the halls, and some of those people you probably know quite well, right, Keith?
Absolutely, Alvin, and you hit the nail right on the head, right? It's about feedback. It's about doing it, as Anna says, in a way that people don't perceive it as you beating them up. They perceive it as this is an opportunity for you and I to come together and help you get better. Mm-hmm. And if people, and one of the things that I always talk about, and this is foundational to anything that you discuss, whether it's emotional intelligence, emotional quotient, whether it's leadership or business, the foundation is trust.
Right.
And if you and I have a relationship where I trust you, then you come into that discussion that says, you know, I know that even though Keith is telling me something difficult, mm-hmm. I trust him. Because he believes in me, I believe in him, and so I trust the fact that he's not going to hurt my feelings for hurting my feelings' sake. He's trying to change that behavior. Anyone on my team will tell you that my favorite saying is behavior drives results. And that's in every area of life. No matter what you do, behavior drives results. If you want to change your life, right? You just change the behaviors and you'll change the outcome. But you got to get people to buy into that, Alvin.
Yeah.
And you have to get people to say, this behavior that you're doing right here is not going to produce the desired result. And if they can agree to that, then that alternate behavior that you talked about becomes real to them.
They can accept
okay,
it.
Tell me about that alternate behavior because I really don't like the result that I'm getting. Help me do something different so I can get a different result. But it all comes back to, do they really trust you, right? Or is it self-serving?
Okay.
To Anna's point.
Okay, well, great. So that implies, of course, a relationship. So
absolutely.
That means that you're the kind of leader that people really look up to and that they're saying, hey, you know what? I really do need to know more. And it appears that what you're doing works well for you, and it works certainly well for the corporation. And so we want to be more like you. I was actually one of those people years and years ago we first met. A gentleman named Ken Kraft, that I was a mentee of, referred me to you. And we met, what was that, early 2000s? Perhaps?
Early 2000s, that's correct.
Yeah, and one of the first things that impressed me not only was your bio, but what happens on your right hand. That ring finger, if you recall, I was impressed. I just couldn't keep my eyes off your national championship ring. And so I'm a little remiss, so let me back up just a bit. So, Keith, you played on Georgia Tech's last championship football team, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so was the term shutdown corner coined because of what you were able to do on the football field?
You know what? I would like to tell you that, but, you know, then that violates that whole trust discussion that I just had. So no. But what I will tell you, though, is that I had a wonderful opportunity to go to Georgia Tech. I had a great opportunity to play there. I lettered for 4 years. I started my senior year, the year we won the national championship. And so it was phenomenal for me. You know, my background is not so dissimilar from Anna's. I mean, I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. I grew up in the inner city. Mm-hmm. And Georgia Tech was a great opportunity for me to change my life, basically. Okay. And was able to do that and got hired at AT&T, went on to get a master's degree in business. And, you know, here I am today. But what I will tell you is that the things that I learned in sports and the things that I learned at Georgia Tech were really foundational and fundamental to me continuing to build upon and grow as a leader in business. I my team probably gets sick of hearing sports analogies, but that's the thing that I love. So I share a lot of sports analogies. And, you know, what I will tell you is that, you know, it's really just it's foundational to life. You know, my high school football coach used to say, you know, football is just life marked off in 100 yards.
And 100 yards at a time.
Yep,
I like it.
And you know what? If you think about it, right, it really is true. And so, and it's just like leadership. You know, it's no different. When you step into that huddle and you're calling a play, and if your team really believes, if they believe in your heart that you think this is the best play for you, you think this is the best direction to go, they're going to follow you. Even if they say, maybe we should do something different, but I trust that we're going to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, if you have the ability to say, you know what, guys, we just ran the wrong play, they'll trust you even more after that. If you're willing to admit that, hey, we just ran the wrong play, let's try that again, let's back up, and sometimes even reach out to your team and say, what play would you run?
There you go.
Right?
Just wanted to bring it up.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Reach out to your team and say, which play would you run? Right? I mean, we're in this tough situation right here. I know what I think I'd like to do. You tell me what you'd like to do, and let's see what the best outcome might be, right? And every now and then, you run a play for your team. I mean, it all sort of ties together, just being able to be vulnerable, right? I mean, you know, it's a great opportunity to, you know, because most leaders think that I've got to be right all the time.
Correct.
You know, I have to be the one that knows the way all the time. I have to be the one that really sort of guides and leads the charge all the time.
That's a lot of pressure.
Well, it is, and it's a, you know, it's a fallacy, quite frankly. And so, so you don't have to be, right? You don't have to be, and quite frankly, your team doesn't want you to be. You know, they want to run the ball sometimes as well. They want to be, you know, their opinions to be sought out and to be engaged and involved. And so from a leadership perspective, right, just that, you know, and I tell my team all the time, I am not so much interested as being in right, as being right, as I am about doing the right thing.
Okay.
Because doing the right thing is what's going to make us all successful, not just me being right. Because, you know, if I'm right and we lose, we lose.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a battle versus war, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, good stuff. So actually, I want to back up just a tad. What do you remember about that magical season, that championship season? Did it all come together or was it
Well, it did, right? I mean, it came together very well. I mean, we had some tremendous players on that team. But you know, I'll tell the story all the time about perseverance. And I know Anna knows a lot about this. Just listening to her and listening to her background, she knows a lot about perseverance. And you know, when I got to Georgia Tech, and we were okay, and I didn't play the first year. We were 5-5-1 my very first year. The first year I actually played, I was a redshirt freshman, and we won 2 football games.
Wow.
We were 2-9, right? Hmm. And I would love to tell you all the other 9 were close. They weren't. they weren't close. And so I will tell you that was, you know, but Bobby Ross made a key decision. He said, you know, I'm going to let some of these young guys play, which I was one, and we're going to give them an opportunity to demonstrate their ability to play. And so the next year, we got a little bit better. We won 3 games.
Mm.
Imagine that. So we were 3-8. And, you know, we played hard in every single game, and we kept believing that we could get better. Third year, 7-4. The last year, 11-0-1, won the national championship with that core group of guys who had suffered through all of those things. And so what you learn from that is that as long as you have a goal, as long as you have a clear goal, you're going to have setbacks, right? Like Anna talked about, you know, it's how you react to that, right? It's how invested are you in that goal and how much you believe in where you're headed, and then how much do you put into it to get the outcome, and you do the right behaviors to get the right results. So the last year was a magical year. It all came together. We had just a phenomenal football team. We had some great players on offense, and Sean Jones and Emmett Merchant and, you know, Bobby Rodriguez and William Bell and all those guys who were phenomenal. And we had some fantastic players on defense, Willie Clay, Marco Coleman, Ken Schwilling, you know, Jeremiah McClary, Thomas Balcom. I mean, I can name them all, right? I mean, like it was yesterday, you know, guys that I came to school with. But what I will tell you is that when you are unified as a team, mm-hmm. and you're focused on the outcome, and results are the thing that's most important,
right?
And the behaviors to get to those results are the things that, you know, drive you. You can achieve anything.
Yeah, and interestingly, you had a Hall of Fame coach too, right?
We absolutely had a Hall of Fame coach.
And coaches. We want to make sure we have deference to those coaches too.
That's right.
So, Anna, you know, there was a little conversation as Keith was talking through about, you know, persistence, and certainly hearing your background and your story, you know, always gives me pause when I hear your story. It's impressive, and to see you come out on the other end with no regrets and to really focus on what you need to be doing next and how you can help others, again, is always astoundingly impressive to me. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
But what I want to understand, and what I want our listeners to understand, and perhaps even pull out some nuggets, is what drives Anna?
Exactly. And just as I was listening to Keith, I must share with you that in leadership, you will often sit, or I often sit in a room of many, many leaders, and there is a problem that needs to be solved. And when somebody is asking for an opinion, everybody's quiet. Why? Because people don't want to be perceived as stupid, as wrong. They want to always be right. But as, just as Keith said, you need to allow yourself to be a human being and to share your ideas. And when you choose to cultivate high potential leaders, when you look at whom you're going to identify as a high potential leader, you should never miss on the emotional intelligence competency that is called independence. And independence is not my ability to say, your opinion doesn't matter, I'm right all the time. No, it is my ability to think independently so that I don't need to be told all the time what to think, what to do. It is my ability to not wait to find out from you as my boss what the later trends are in our industry, mm-hmm. what the stock price is, or what our stakeholders want. It is my ability to go and reach out to the community through many, many tools that are available and find that information on my own and bring this to the table. And as a diversity, as a diverse group of people, leaders in organizations should have different opinions. And by having an open discussion, they need to be able to find the right solution. Just as Keith said, very often you believe in your goal and you think that you're doing the right thing. But if you don't ask your peers and other leaders what they think, and if you don't get their engagement and their authentic answers, you may miss up on opportunities. So when you identify high potential leaders to cultivate, I suggest that you always run the emotional intelligence assessment on them to discover what their competences are, especially independence, because you don't want to be your strategic business partner to be sitting in the room saying, whatever you want, I think your ideas are great. You want people to have an argument. And of course, it has to be in a respectful manner, in a nice conversation, in a friendly conversation, maybe not very nice all the time, but people have to be able to be engaged and share. Yeah. But what drives Anna is that very thing. I've been always having my own opinion about everything. And I've been always committed to do my research. If I, let's say I wanted to go to business school, mm-hmm. and I needed several amount to pay for that. Well, I believed that I am such a value to that business school because in my previous school, in my teaching school, I have been active with this and that, and I've participated in many, many conferences, and I wrote such and such research papers that I just came to school and I told them that I am unable to pay that much money, and I think that I will be a great asset to them. And they told me, Anna, how can you live your life being so honest? And I said, I just wanted to let you know. And I've been accepted to the school without any payments.
Wow.
And I did it twice in my life. And, you know, when I have an idea and I want to go for it, as a leader in any organization, you will find somebody who will say, that's stupid. You'll never make any changes in this environment. That's going to take you forever. Or whatever, whatever people will say. People always gossip. They always spend time talking about you behind your back near the water cooler. If you're doing something significant and important, you will always be unliked by some people. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. But you need to look, and that's how I look at things in my life. There are many people who start what I started and do not succeed. Are there any people who do succeed? What differentiates those who do succeed from those who don't? Well, I'm going to be among those who do succeed, whatever it is that I do in my life. And that's been since I was 12 years old. I remember that, when I was 11, I was smoking, drinking vodka and pure alcohol from the pharmacy with my friends. And I realized that something was wrong in my life. And that's not, but in the same time, I was making excellent grades at school. And I was perceived as a leader at school. I was always on the board of honored students. And I felt like something was wrong in my life. And I just went to the library in my school number 36 in the city of Kursk, and I talked to my librarian, Emma Alexandrovna. I remember now her name was Emma Alexandrovna, and I told her what I felt about myself. And she said, here's the book I think you need to read. And that book was about difficult teenagers.
Okay.
And through reading that book, and the next book was Dale Carnegie, and then Louise Hay, You Can Heal Yourself, and all those books, I've discovered that I was not in a normal environment, but to get me where I saw my future, where I wanted to be, I had to be different. I had to fight for my life. I had to fight for myself. I had to fight for my ideas, because they were always stupid in the environment I lived in.
Just a little different, right?
Exactly. When I graduated from my third school with red diploma with high honor from my third school, my mother said I wasted her life and my own life. She said, yeah. So
That's interesting. Well, you're listening to Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. And we're spending time with Keith Holmes, the Vice President, General Manager of Mobility and Consumer Markets for AT&T, and Anna Stevens, an entrepreneur and founder of EQ for Success. And so, Keith, when you sit down and talk to the people who are coming to you, when an Alvin Miles shows up at your office, okay, you know, how do you know that you're talking to a potential leader? Are there certain things that kind of stand out, or do you look at the background? What do you do mentally when you kind of go through your checklist?
Well, so Alvin, you know, allow me just to sort of walk you through the framework that I use when I think about high potential leaders, or I think about people on my team who are really driving to get things done. You know, what I try to determine is, and it's a bit of a house, right? So the foundation is trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at those individuals and I say to myself, and I ask them, quite frankly, you know, are you trusted? You know, can you be trusted? Do people trust you? Because it's difficult to be a leader in any environment if there's a lack of trust. It just is, right? I mean, you will end up in a situation where it's mediocrity, because you'll only have those followers who can't do something different. No one wants to follow a leader that they just don't trust. And so that foundation is trust. One of the first pillars I always take a look at is leadership. You know, and leadership is a quality that that people have that says, you know, Rosalind Carter says it best, right? She says that, you know, a good leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader not only takes people where they want to go, but where they ought to be. And there's a difference, right? Yeah. A difference from where you want to go and where you ought to be might be different. And sometimes people have to take you kicking and screaming to get there. However, once you get there, you feel real good about the process.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause sometimes we can't see beyond our own limitations, but other people see more in us than we see in ourselves. And I've had that happen time and time and time again in my life, where people have spoken into my life, you know, you can do more, you can be more, even more than I believed in. And so when people come to me, Alvin, as leaders, you know, I take a look at them and I say, do they have the ability to help others get across that goal line?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have the ability to help themselves get across that goal line when people are pointing out, here's something that you can go do? So that's the first pillar. The middle pillar is coaching, right? And coaching is one of those things that says, you know, at the end of the day, behavior drives results. And I'm not going to spend so much time with you talking about the end game.
Mm-hmm.
I want to spend time with you talking about the inputs, because we spend a lot of time talking about the outputs sometimes, and those outputs can be gotten in various ways. And in some ways, we wouldn't want to celebrate. And so you want to spend time just saying, you know, what are you doing every single day to drive those inputs that will lead to the outputs? And if you're doing the right things, don't despair, because you will, you know, you'll get the right results over time, very much like we did at Georgia Tech through that 2-9, 3-8, 7-4, 11-1 season. As long as you're doing the right things, you can have a high sense of certainty that you're going to get the end result, but you have to stay committed to that. And so when I'm looking at leaders, looking at that trust, I'm looking at their leadership, looking at their coaching, and then the third pillar is ownership. And ownership just says, are you engaged? And I think Anna used that word just a little while ago, engagement. Are you engaged in the process, right? Are you engaged in the organization? Are you, you know, one of those people that, you know, you always have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, you know, participate. You want to have an opportunity to, you know, have everyone on your team say, man, that person's, you know, always talking about what the goal is, always talking about where we're headed, you know, engaged in the process, fired up about the process, if you will. You know, nothing great was ever, I think John Kennedy said, nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. And so are you enthusiastic
exactly.
about, you know, are you enthusiastic about what you're doing, right? Are you just here? And so, you know, I look at that coaching, I look at that leadership, that coaching and that ownership. And then finally, you know, Alvin, one of the things that I try to look at from a leadership perspective and, you know, some young person coming to me is, you know, if it's all about them, mm-hmm. that's a red flag, right? If it's me, that's a red flag, because great leaders are servants. Great leaders are servant leaders, and they're people who their goal is to help other people be successful, right? They want to, you know, if they come to me and they say, I have these people on my team and I feel like we can be a better team, therefore they can achieve their goals and everyone can win, those are great leaders, right? Mm-hmm. Those are high potential leaders. Those people who look at their team and say, come with me, let me drag you along, let me help you be successful, because great leaders are servants. So to put it all together in a framework, right, it's trust. That's the foundation. First pillar is leadership, taking people where they ought to be, coaching, making sure you focus on the behaviors and not just the outcomes, right? Making sure that everybody is involved in that. Ownership, be engaged, be enthused, be fired up, be excited. It's okay to be excited. I'm a very excited person. I get fired up about things. And quite frankly, you know, my team, they'll tell you. I mean, I am passionate about where we're headed. I am passionate about our goals. And that passion sort of breeds over into that emotional intelligence because, you know, there's a saying that when you set yourself on fire, people will come from miles around to watch you burn, right? And so, you know, so I'm always about that. And then the last is be a servant, right, in every area of your life, you know. And I'll tell you, you asked Anna what drives her, right? And I'll tell you, you know, there's a quote by Mark Twain that's very powerful to me. And if you ask my wife, she'll tell you, you know, I fail miserably at it from time to time. But I try really hard. And it says that, you know, let us live so that when we die, even the undertaker will be sorry. And that's the kind of leadership that I'm looking for, the kind of people I want on my team, that they always leave a mark, they always leave a legacy. And when they're around, people say, man, I'm glad I had a relationship with that person.
And that's what drives Keith Holmes.
That's exactly right.
Well, fantastic. We appreciate that. So, Anna, as we step over to you, why is emotional intelligence such an important element to successful leaders above and beyond perhaps what we've heard? Is there a piece that we're missing?
Yes, and there are many pieces that we can talk about emotional intelligence, honestly,
all day,
forever.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, but one of the great things about people and leaders being chosen for their emotional intelligence competencies is that you can then be sure that not only will they add value, but they will also teach others how to add value. And in your organization, with your leadership style and your leadership goals, you have to start with the end in mind, just like Dr. Stephen Covey was saying. And that's what I teach, just like what Keith said. I teach it in my workshops. I do an exercise, 10 things that I appreciate in my life, 10 things that makes my life great. And then I tell people, think about it from the perspective that tomorrow you don't wake up anymore. Mm-hmm. You no more tomorrow. What will you regret that you did not do with your life? Maybe you did not lose the weight you always wanted. Maybe you did not establish relationship. You did not have children. Maybe you were always so self-centered that you lived only for yourself. Well, today, the good part is that you're still alive.
That's right.
Go do these things. And until you make people think about it and actually put these thoughts on paper, they don't go through this self-discovery process. And when I started talking to my husband about it, he's like, why are you even think about it? You think so differently. Nobody ever thinks about things like that. But that's how you live your life, and that's how you be. You ensure that you are a great leader. You start with the end in mind. If tomorrow I'm no more, what are people going to say? And when you are a leader in organization, when you go to a networking event, you use the same concept. What are the three words I would like my people to say, what people in this networking event say about me and my company when I leave? Now, how can I walk into this room and make it happen? You start with the end in mind. And what I suggest to people whom I do executive coaching with is that I suggest that they have, first of all, Thanksgiving journal. And the second journal I recommend is a leadership journal. In their Thanksgiving journal, I recommend that they don't wait for Thanksgiving to say thanks to people or whomever they thank. Maybe they thank God if they're religious. Maybe if they're not religious, they thank universe. Maybe they're just appreciative and they thank people. You have to establish this habits of appreciation to others so that you don't become and remain self-centered. What I suggest that people do is every day before they go to bed, instead of checking their iPhone, their Facebook or Twitter, and filling up their mind with something that has nothing to do with good sleep and rest.
And that they can't control.
I suggest that instead they pull up their nice-looking Thanksgiving journal and write down five thanks to either people who demonstrated an act of kindness toward them, or maybe said nice word to them, or maybe some event that happened and helped them advance in their life or career. Or maybe they had some kind of discovery. Maybe they've learned something today. Give thanks for that. What is it going to do to you? Why would you start a Thanksgiving journal like this? That's going to help you exercise your gratitude. And when you exercise your gratitude on a regular basis, then you become a greater leader. Then you become a greater leader because you come to work next morning instead of driving in your car and listening to all the bad things that happen in Colorado and whoever killed what or what. So many bad things happen every day, but so many good things happen every
day. That we miss.
You can drive to work and in remembering your Thanksgiving journal writings from yesterday, you can count your blessings this morning, and you show up to work with a nice attitude. You love people, you're happy to be alive, and that's how you go and you make things happen for yourself and your organization and your team. But a leadership journal that I suggest to my clients is a second journal that you have, and what I suggest is that they write in it every morning. And every morning they set up three leadership behaviors that they're going to focus on demonstrating today and promoting and recognizing them in people as well. And they put it all in writing, because once you put it all in writing, you make a public commitment, so you know you're going to follow through. And at the end of the day, I suggest that they review their leadership journal and they make notes on what their observations and conclusions are. And next morning they do the next three leadership behaviors. This way, a person can actually lead his or herself. But mentorship programs that you were talking about, being a mentor and a mentee, adds so much value to global leadership, because not only do you learn something, but you also pass this knowledge. Many things that we know about leadership, they are tacit knowledge.
Tacit
knowledge that is not written anywhere.
That's right.
Unspoken, maybe. You just know it. And so through mentorship programs in an organization, you can actually pass this knowledge and help other leaders advance, just like Keith was talking.
Some great points, right, Keith?
That's exactly right.
Well, one of the things I wanted to do, actually, when you were talking through your model, Keith, and actually I actually have the notes I made from the first time you stopped by several years ago and addressed our students at Kennesaw State University's Executive MBA program. You mentioned that the house is built on a foundation of trust. Now, knowing that there are several failures people go through in their lives, and there could be a dearth of trust or a gap in trust, how can leaders rehabilitate the trust?
Well, it's really about relationship, right? I mean, once you determine that you have that gap, if you've had that gap, if you've betrayed someone's trust, if you've done something that you're not proud of, you know, the first thing you do is you take ownership of that.
Okay.
You know, trust is being vulnerable, right? Just, you know, you open yourself up from an emotional perspective and you say, folks, you know, I've failed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've let people down, done things I'm not proud of. But let me tell you, I'm beginning with the end in mind, as Anna says, but in my vernacular, I'm looking at the outcomes, and I realize that the behaviors that I exhibited before will not yield the results that I'd like to get to. So therefore, to change my life, I need to change my life. And when you change the inputs, you change the outputs. And so therefore, this is how I'm going to behave going forward. Hold me accountable to
Perfect.
That. you give people an opportunity to hold you accountable to that. And when I stray off the path or I do something I shouldn't do, ring the bell.
Yeah.
Let me know. Don't be afraid to say, hey, you're off the path. You are not doing what you indicated that you would do. And then hold me accountable to keeping you involved along the way. And so therefore, when you do those things, people will tend to trust you more. You will earn back that trust. And when you're doing that, at the same time trying to help them be successful, people are more likely to trust you.
There you go.
When it's not about you, but it's about them, and you're trying to help them be successful and help them grow, they're more likely to trust you as well. And so you can rehabilitate that, but you have to be sincere about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be purposeful about it.
Right.
You have to set clear goals and direction, and then you have to make it not about you, but about others.
And then, of course, you have to make sure that you're doing some introspection, and then, as you pointed out, having accountability partners, having someone ring the bell in case you're not quite on the
absolutely.
Beaten path. Right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, what's important, and I think the reason why I thought that was important for our listening audience is because sometimes people realize that, you know, it's not a straight line. Leadership is not always, linear. You don't just move from point A to point E MBA or any other point, quite frankly, by making certain that it's all vertical. I mean, there are going to be some divergencies, some detours along the path, and you're going to get knocked down every now and again. So I think what's great about hearing you both talk about this, particularly you, Keith, is that, there's always hope. The game's never over until the final.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things, you know, I go and if you'd indulge me for like 2 minutes, I'm going to tell a little story. You know, I go and speak to kids a lot. And I tell kids all the time, I say, guys, you know, let's imagine for a moment, if you will, that we're a football team. Let's just imagine if we're a football team. And let's imagine that we go out to play. And we kick the ball off to the other team and they run it back for a touchdown. How do you feel? Oh, I feel terrible. So let's imagine now they kick the ball off to us. We fumble. They fall on it. Next play, they score a touchdown, 14-0. We're down before the clock even hits 2 minutes. So now let's say we kick it off to them again. We stop them. Now they score again, 21-0, right? How do you feel? Oh, we feel terrible. Man, we'd feel like quitting. We'd feel like walking off the field. And I said, now, okay, what if I told you in the locker room, before we took the field, what if I said, hey, we're going to kick it off. They're going to score. They're going to kick it off to us. We're going to fumble. They're going to score. We're going to kick it off again, stop them, but they're going to score on the next play. But we're going to come back and win 28-21. How would you feel then? Oh, I feel great. So would you quit then? No, I wouldn't quit. And I said, that's life. You have to imagine that you're going to win. You have to believe that no matter what happens, you're going to win. And if you have an attitude of success, and you have an attitude that at the end of the day, no matter all the bumps in the road that happens, as long as you've got the end in mind, you can put up with all of those puts and takes that happen. And so that's the attitude that you have to have in any area of your life, whether it's personal or professional, but as a leader specifically, because you're going to make decisions that not everyone's going to like. And sometimes as a leader, you make a decision and not everyone likes it and you feel like, oh my God, that was a bad decision. Well, it really wasn't, right? I mean, not everyone's going to like everything.
Right.
That's just a part of the process. But as long as you are leading with integrity, you're leading with trust, you're engaged, and you believe that all these things we go through will produce the right outcome, you can keep engaged, you can keep in the game, and you can go make it happen. And so, you know, from that perspective, I think that's the one thing that, you know, sort of slows people down is, you know, one bad bump in the road and, you know, they want to get off the track, right? They want to get off the bus. You know, the bus hits a bump, they want to get off.
How unfortunate is that, right?
Well, so many people do.
Absolutely. So, Anna, you actually help people to understand that. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, this whole movement toward EQ is not really something that just started yesterday, right? I mean, this has been around for quite some time. In corporations, from a corporate perspective, they would not step forward and really embrace this if there were not a way to convert leadership to the bottom line. So it is paying off. I mean, you are seeing it. Certainly, Keith, you're seeing it, that the best leaders, obviously, you can hear Keith embody that leadership. I mean, how many people listening on this radio broadcast would not want to follow this guy? I mean, so this is what you teach, and this is the way it manifests itself in the bottom line someplace. Am I correct?
Exactly. And when you, if you want to see studies on return on investment for organizations on emotional intelligence training and assessments, if you're interested for your blog, I can definitely send you the document.
Perfect.
And in this document, you will see that American Express had actually tried it, and they saw a significant return on investment for their company. And now everybody who joins American Express as an employee has to go through several days of emotional intelligence training. Google, when they started their initiatives, and there is a new book out there that's called Search Inside Yourself, because leadership does not start out of the blue. It starts with your personal leadership. Mm-hmm. And so the book, Search Inside Yourself, actually is a course that has been taught in at Google forever now. Mm. And the person who teaches it is a Google engineer, one of their first engineers. And so when he started it, it was like, I have nothing to do with emotions. I'm an engineer. But then people started joining this course. And so now people who were obese, they were unhealthy. They did not have any balance or happiness in their life. They were not optimistic. Now they were able to change those behaviors. They started seeing more value in their health. They started going exercise. They started putting more life into their relationships with people outside of their work. Now they started working less, but being more productive. And so people started getting promoted to managerial positions as soon as they cut off on their work hours.
Wow.
And so that has nothing to do with how many hours you work. Maybe you're just sitting there being disengaged, just like Keith was saying, right? It has to do something with your mindset, with what it is that you're coming to work to do. Are you coming there to gossip about who wears what, who said what, who is wrong, who is right? Or are you coming there with your own goals and with your own objectives to accomplish, and you understand how what you do today near the water cooler affects your company's bottom line, the perspective of your customers,
great point,
and so forth. Yeah.
Great point. So a couple of rapid-fire questions. So, Keith, I'll start with you. So knowing that AT&T is an international company with global reach, how does one differentiate themselves from the herd so that they stand out in a good way in your mind?
Well, it's really about, you know, all the things we talked about, Alvin. It's okay. About being engaged. It's about being involved. It's about having a great attitude, as Anna says. I mean, people love to be around people they love to be around, right?
Okay.
And that's important. And so, you know, having a great attitude, and then, you know, focusing in on results. You know, whatever the company gives you to do, do it well.
Okay.
Do it well. I mean, network off your results, right? I mean, you know, I know the top sellers in every part of our business, right? Because they're at the top of the list. You network off your results. So do it well, but do it right, and do it with a great attitude, and you can be successful both internationally, domestically, and globally.
And globally.
Absolutely.
Anna, your thoughts?
My thought is that if I had an opportunity to name just one emotional intelligence competency that would drive global leadership in organizations, that would be empathy. Why? Because empathy enables you to understand your coworkers, to aim for win-win solutions for problems with your partners, with your managers, with your investors. So when you have empathy, then you are able to also adjust the value proposition of your company to satisfy the needs of your target market, because you are looking at it from the perspective not what you want to gain, but how you can help them solve your problems. And I know Keith was saying multiple times today that it's all about relationships, mm-hmm. and you cannot build relationships if you stay self-centered, as he was saying, without empathy. You need to be open-minded, and empathy also allows for diversity. I just attended Technology Association of Georgia event that was dedicated to diversity, and they were talking about how leaders just can't accept it. They can't stay open-minded. They can't accept people for who they are and the value they add. So empathy will allow diversity and acceptance as well in corporate America.
Okay, great. Second rapid-fire question. What do you wish someone had told you before you took the role you're in today? Keith, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, before I took the role I'm in today, I think I wish, you know, someone had told me, you know, how difficult it was going to be, right, to transition. I mean, the job that I took, we're in a transition. Okay. And I wish someone had told me that, you know, Keith, that, you know, your progress is good or your program is outstanding, but it's going to take a little longer than you thought. And so I would have felt better about it. But it's just, you know, progress is good. The program's headed in the right direction, but it's just taken a little longer than we thought. But quite frankly, we are on the right path and I feel good about it. I just would have been a little less frustrated along the way if I had known it's going to take as long as it took.
Very good. Anna?
That the failure is okay.
Okay.
I did not know that the failure is okay. And I would say that before, in my earlier years in my life, I was very high on self-regard. And that's emotional intelligence competency that enables you to stand by your rights and your beliefs. I'm right all the time and things like that. But healthy level, balanced level of self-regard is what's good for business. If I knew that failure is okay, I would more acceptive of my own self before. That's why coming to that conclusion now, I'm so happy with where I'm at with my life and my business. And I think that leaders have to be cannot allow a leader to be high on self-regard and putting people down and thinking that it's all about them and their ideas. It has to be, you know, throwing things on the wall, allowing other people to also risk and maybe fail. But you, if you do not challenge yourself, if you do not fail, you're not going to succeed because you're not going to gain experience.
Right. Right. Very good point. So we've been listening to Keith Holmes, the VP GM of Mobility and Consumer Markets for AT&T, and Anna Stevens, an entrepreneur who specializes in social media and marketing. That's a secret. Don't tell anybody that. And she's also the founder of EQ for Success. So now my final question for each of you. Your answer to this question will be posted on our blog. So which business book, and I'll have to expand this perhaps above and beyond just business book, but for today, which business book has most impacted your leadership ability?
The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
By the late Stephen Covey.
Yeah, so sorry to hear about him. Yeah. I think he impacted many leaders around the world, and I have the 13 CDs for this book in my car. I listen to them all the time when I go to Savannah. My family lives in Savannah. Was very sorry to hear about him, but I think that when he was gone, I think he had accomplished what he envisioned for himself in his very exercise about imagining that you are no more. What will people say about you? I think he had accomplished it, and that's what he teaches. And I think he taught me to walk my talk and also talk my walk, to be able to pass my knowledge to people, but also live what I preach to others.
Wow, what a legacy. So thank you for that. So Keith, which business book has most impacted your leadership ability?
So the book that impacted me the most, and I've read lots of books, as you can imagine, but Jesus CEO by Laurie Beth Jones is an outstanding book, and it really impacted me a lot because it talks about servant leadership. It talks about you know, all the things that I espouse in terms of, you know, lead with your values and make those the cornerstone of your life, and you'll be successful going forward. So Jesus CEO is probably the book that I admire the most. But I've read lots, and I could, you know, quote a lot of them, but there are lots of good books out there.
Thank you. So Anna and Keith, on behalf of our learning community, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have both of you join us today to share your thoughts, expertise, and passion. Certainly, if you can't hear the passion or feel the passion coming through this radio broadcast, you might want to get that checked. So I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future. Is that a deal?
Sure. Yes, thanks so much for having us today.
Well, great. Well, with that in mind, could each of you tell us how our learning community can contact you by email or phone?
www.eqforsuccess.com is my website. I have a blog, and my Facebook page is very interactive. You guys can learn some motivational tips and a lot of things about emotional intelligence, and that's facebook.com/eqforsuccess. I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/eqforsuccess. And
I see a pattern here.
Yeah, my email address is anna@eqforsuccess.com.
Very good. And Keith?
All right, man. Anna's got lots of ways to get in touch. I'm not that high touch, I guess. KeithHolmes@att.com is the easiest way to get me.
So with that response, we'll bring this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. So we invite you to check out Web Presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. Also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. So I'd certainly enjoy hearing your thoughts, and I appreciate those of you who have already sent those to me. I've used those in several different genres and used those in several different questions we've asked throughout the last few weeks. So next week is Labor Day, and the staff and I will be enjoying time with our family and friends. Right, Kevin? Yeah, so we'll return the following Monday on September 10th at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.